I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes.
Hi, my name's Ricky Wilde. This is my first podcast and I'm giving it a go, and it's called Unsung Heroes. And today I'm very honoured to be surrounded by a bunch of fabulous people. And today we're going to be talking about all aspects of music industry, about some of the songs that I've written, some of the hits, along with some of my guests. First of all, I'd like to introduce a wonderful guy called Lee Bennett. He's just an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to new music and old music and our stuff and the wild music. Yeah, and welcome. Tell us about yourself, mate.
Thank you. Really wonderful to be here with you. So I'm Lee. I have a music blog called Teases and Dares, which is named after a very classic wild album from 1984. As Rick says, I blog mainly about new artists, new music that I like, which I often share with Rick, and most of the time he likes. Occasionally I get it horribly wrong, but most of the time I don't. My love affair with the wild started in 1981, and the first record I ever bought was Cambodia, and I never looked back from there, and I've been with you ever since. Yeah. So I'm probably responsible for a couple of these gold records, I reckon, that are in the room that we're in today. But there we are.
Yeah, Lee's going to be with us on every show, talking about all the new music that he listens to and all the new acts. Many that have, over the years, he's introduced me to have gone on to massive things. Sigrid is just one that springs to mind. Frida Sandemo. Lee introduced me to Frida, and Frida finished up being a guest artist on a song called Rosetta, which is off Kim's latest album, Here Come the Aliens, and that was all through Lee. So thank you for that, my friend.
God bless you.
Also with us today is a guy called Sean Vincent. Sean is Kim's manager. Sean has been a dear friend of mine. We had a label together for a while, Sonic Hub. He comes on tour with us. He does the out front sound for us, all our live gigs. Does an incredible job. He does all the mixing with me. So he mixed all my albums with me. He's an amazing writer as well. And he's just an amazing guy, amazing talent. And it's an honour to have you with us, mate. So welcome.
Pleasure. You're too kind. That was all really nice. I just hang around you and ride your coattails, mate. Good to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you, mate. Also, we have Mr. Jake Wood. Jake.
Listen, I hope you're going to build me up as Sean, because that's quite incredible.
Jake's a hero. Yeah. Everything Jake does turns to gold. He's just amazing.
Bless you, mate.
The other day, he was asked to do a marathon, and he goes, yeah, I'll do that. So he just suddenly jumps in, runs 26 miles.
Yeah, next to no training. I probably should have done a bit of training, shouldn't I?
But smashed it.
Yeah, no, it's a good day.
Obviously, most people know him as Max Branning in EastEnders. But then he goes and starts dancing on bloody Strictly, and it's Mr. Snake Hips himself. He smashes that as well. And then he starts a boxing podcast, and he smashed it with that as well. Just everything he does turns to gold.
Oh, bless you.
And I love you, mate. So lovely to have you with
lovely
us.
Lovely too. Pleasure to be here. And it's super exciting to be part of what you're setting out to do. But yeah, we'll hear more about that in a second.
Excellent. And finally, we have, my dear sister, Miss Kim Wilde.
Hello, bro.
How are you, mate? She needs no introduction, really, I think. So I think everybody knows pretty much what you've done and what you do, what you're about. But if they don't, they will by the end of this show.
They certainly will.
They certainly will.
Hey, Rick, so great to be in this room full of these fabulous people. And so tell us, what is it you really want to do with gathering everyone here? What do you want to achieve today?
Okay, predominantly, this is going to be for music lovers and for songwriters and music producers and anybody that's interested in the unsung heroes of the industry, people in the background and behind the scenes, you know. I just find it a fascinating subject. There's so many people that I know their names, but I don't know what makes them tick. I don't see them interviewed, and I think it's time that they should be celebrated. They're the unsung heroes, I think, because without those songs, the artists wouldn't be there, I don't think, in a lot of cases. Although, that you know, there are artists that write their own stuff, and we will be chatting with those as well. Because in a way, they are unsung heroes, and for the fact that a lot of people don't know they actually wrote those songs. So in that department, they are unsung heroes as well. So kind of like that's what it's about. And I've got the idea through my co-producer, Jake Wood, who has his own podcast called Pound for Pound. Tell us about that, Jake.
Well, I'm a huge boxing fan. I've been a massive boxing fan all of my life. And one of my best mates is Spencer Oliver, ex-European champion. I love podcasts. Like, I started to get into them probably like 2 years ago or something. And then sort of had the idea that maybe we could do one. Because me and Spencer would sit around and talk about boxing for hours on end. And so, yeah, for us, it was just really exciting to put a microphone on that and just sort of invite an audience to listen in. You've always been a big part of that, Ricky, because you do all the music. We've got all these, like, kind of little hooky kind of
little stings.
Segments.
Yeah.
We've got Carl Froch doing his little bit every week, and we've always asked you to do the bits of music for us.
Froch, jeez.
And they're classics, you know what I mean? Classics. So yeah, you've been involved from day one in that sense. So I guess for you, it's kind of, for me, it feels like knowing you, you've had a connection with podcasts through kind of what we're doing. We, you know, we do an episode every week and what you've done for us. So yeah, we started talking about it, didn't we, in terms of...
Well, you mentioned it to me. You said, Rick, you should do one. And I said, well, yeah, maybe, I don't know. What can we do about songwriting? Of course.
Yeah, but I mean, the idea came around really quickly, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
From my point of view, knowing you, Rick, and where you are in the industry and what your history is, and that you're uniquely placed to have these conversations and the connections you've got, the people that you know, I just think it's, you know, for me, that'd be really exciting to hear that documented. You know, I'd love to hear about songwriters, the process. It's not, you know, I'm not an expert, but I love to hear people that are passionate about what they do, and I know certainly you and Kim are that. So
it's something that I find a fascinating subject, songwriting in general, because there are no rules. There's no, you know, everybody has their own different ways of writing, and some people write on guitar, someone might say something and that'll spark something off, you know. You just don't know. There's no hard, fast rules. There are tips you can have, mm-hmm. that make it a little bit easier to write a lyric. We'll touch upon that a bit later on, and I'm sure with all the artists and writers that we speak to, I'm sure there'll be, you know, more tips that we can pick up. And I want to learn those, and I want to talk to them, and I want to know their stories, and I want to know what made them write and what inspires them and what music they're listening to, all this kind of stuff. That fascinates me. And so that's kind of what Unsung Heroes is about. So we'll see how we get on with that.
Mm. Can I just put in, what do you know about podcasts, Kim? Do you listen to any, or do you...
Do you know what? I don't know anything about podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they're a good alternative to listening to music or listening to radio. It's interesting to hear what people have to say about their lives. I mean, as you get older, I'm interested in that. And often I think in my mind that a podcast is a great opportunity for people to share their experience of actually just being alive. So, yeah, what's more interesting than listening to the story of anyone's life? But for us, certainly, music is a great thing to talk about, because it gets our engines roaring, and it gets the fire going, and hopefully makes for a more compelling podcast.
I think it will. But
Yeah, and also with some of the guests that we'll be talking to, people like Nick Kershaw, we've toured with Nick many times. I played with Nick in his band, a great honour. Bloody hell, that was hard.
Yeah.
It's chord central. I mean, he knows so many chords, more than I know.
Ricky in rehearsals of a Nick Kershaw, I never saw him look so ill.
Oh, my God.
He went white every time he picked up a guitar. He looked so nervous about it. He actually thought he couldn't, he thought he wouldn't be able to play the millions of chords that Nick Kershaw somehow managed to cram in.
The guy's a genius. We've been counting how many chords in one of the songs that he was doing. I can't remember which one it was. I remember it, though, and I'll come back to it. But there was something like bloody 20 chords in the verse. And before we even hit the chorus. And it's like, oh, my God! And that's just one song. But no, he's an amazing talent, and we'll be talking to him. There'll be Graham Gordman from 10cc, who's written some amazing songs. I'm Not In Love being just one of my all-time favourite songs. And Graham very kindly said he's up for it. Mike Batt, who wrote Bright Eyes for Art Garfunkel, beautiful song. All these amazing writers. Gary Osborne, who wrote one of your favourite songs, Kim.
For Elton John, Blue Eyes.
Blue Eyes, and what a beautiful song. Yeah. And Part Time Love, and you know, he's just an amazing talent, lovely man. Richard Kerr, who wrote Mandy, beautiful song for Barry Manilow. Everyone thought Barry Manilow wrote it, but obviously he didn't.
Was it Brandy originally?
It was originally Brandy, yeah.
Yeah. I came with you to one of your Sods evening. Maybe you should talk about that as well, what the Sods are and what they do, because that was fascinating. I came to that. But he did a version of that at the night, didn't he? And it was Brandy.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. And very sadly, the guy that he wrote the song with had passed away only a few days before, and so he was talking about that and talking about the song and where it came from, and Brandy was the original title, and for whatever reason it got changed back to Mandy, and then he went and performed it and played it on piano.
It was beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. A beautiful song as well. And yes, but he's part of, he's actually the King Sod this year. And the Sods are, it's called the Society of Distinguished Songwriters, of which I'm honoured to be a member. And we have some incredible writers in there. Tim Rice, Don Black, Mike Batt, Guy Fletcher, God, there's Nicky Chin, there's Phil Thorn Alley. There's all these incredible guys that have written amazing songs. You probably wouldn't know half of those names, but being a member, I do, obviously, and I've got to know them very well as friends. And they're incredible talent. And we all sit there and it's like three stag do's, and at the end of the year there's the ladies' night, which you came to with us, Jake.
Yeah, it was awesome. I've never been in a room with more talent.
Amazing, isn't
it? It's incredible, everyone was doing versions of their songs, and every song was just a classic.
Yeah.
And just these guys getting up and had no idea. You'd walk past them in the street, you wouldn't know. And I think, like, with what you're doing, the Unsung Heroes, that, like, the title is so apt for me, because these guys are heroes.
They're certainly my heroes. I'd just like to pay a little tribute to Les Reed, who was unbelievable on that night. He sung Kind of Hush. And what a beautiful song that was. And God rest his soul.
Do you know, it's one of my all-time favourite songs.
Yeah, beautiful. Very sadly, he passed away recently. Yeah. So I'd just like to pay a little tribute to him and say what a wonderful guy he was. A lovely man. Incredible. Very sad he's left us. And God bless Les. And then we've got Tony Mortimer as well, who I had a little chat with the other day.
Oh, fun.
From E17. Oh, I love that
How
band
cool.
Anyway. And he's going to be talking about some of the stuff he wrote, all the hits he wrote. But that's just touching upon loads of other guests, and I won't go into those. But they're the kind of people that you're going to be hearing about and hear me chatting to.
So, can I just buy Lee? So as Ricky's and Kim's probably biggest fan in the world, is probably a fair thing. What would you ask them about, like, the process and what they've done? I say, you know, it'd be nice to know what places Ricky. Why is he uniquely placed, do you think, to do this podcast?
I think one of the things when I first met Ricky that is still so true today, it's just his love for music still now. It doesn't feel like a job. You speak about music so passionately that it's just infectious. And I can imagine working with you, if you're a songwriter or a singer, just that must rub off. You've just got so much to share with people, I think, in terms of that love of music, which is just absolutely incredible. And I think you do it with such, you're so humble as well, which I think is incredible. You know, you're quite happy. being in the shadows, as it were, and truly that definition of the unsung hero, I think. And
your skill with a melody
is, you know, unrivaled. And I think if you're a Kim Wilde fan, you can hear a Rick Wilde melody quite quickly in a song. You're like, yep, that's a classic Rick melody. You hear it straight away. But I think it would be great to understand how you two work together, and particularly it'll be interesting because Kim's first three albums were largely written by Ricky and your dad Marty, and then by album number four Kim becomes a songwriter. So it'd be really interesting to understand, was that really scary in terms of having to show your homework to your brother and your dad?
Oh yeah, it was really scary. It sort of coincided with me leaving home, so I was quite a late leaver. I went to art college in St Albans. Mum and Dad at that point decided to have, were blessed with two more children. So I, as well as like appearing on Top of the Pops and doing Kids in America, I'd be going home and changing nappies. And so, you know, it was a really interesting start. I wasn't like clubbing around London and hanging out with Boy George, and although I did hang out with Steve Strange one day, but that was an exception. But yeah, I was living at home, you know, very, very sort of normal life, really, in between doing Top of the Pops. And then, of course, it took off in Germany and then it took off all over the world. So I was travelling nonstop. So I didn't have any opportunity to become a writer for the first 3 years. I've basically lived in a suitcase. It worried me that. I mean, I didn't like not being a songwriter. It did play on my mind a lot, all the time, in fact. And I love working with Rick and Dad, and they were writing such exciting songs. And I'd step into this world and I'd be singing about Cambodia or View from a Bridge. And these were great things, places to go and sort of let my imagination let loose. And as a singer, which primarily I am a singer, it was wonderful. By the time the fourth album came along, I had left home, and that's when I became a writer. That's when I bought a little four-track, put it in my bedroom. I started writing initially with my guitarist Steve Bird at the time. Then I'd play some stuff to Rick and to my dad. It was a scary thing to do.
Do you remember that moment?
I do, and they were so kind and they were really encouraging. They were brilliant. You know, of course, as it became very obvious, very quickly I wrote a hit with my guitarist Steve. We were at another step for Junior Giscombe and myself. And then I never looked back. It was a scary transition. I did work very, very hard at it. I spent a lot of time listening to the songs that I loved, especially an artist called Todd Rundgren, who's just an incredible songwriter, one of the best songwriters in the world. And his work with the way he put songs together, I learned very basic stuff like choruses and bridges and middle eights and just the basic song structure. I had plenty to say. And of course I was in and out of love all that period of time. So it was always interesting. There's always someone to, you know, talk about and some experience to do with the heart that fitted to a song. Of course it did.
One of the first songs that you wrote that got onto an album was Fit In, which is interesting with you saying it coincided with you leaving home, because I'm guessing that song is very much sounding like someone that's left home and is now living in the Big Smoke. It sounds like a song about...
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it was kind of difficult for me because I love pop music. I grew up watching Top of the Pops. I loved ABBA and I loved Debbie Harry and I loved all the 70s glam. I love pop music. Both Ricky and I do, obviously. But at home, we were listening to very different kinds of music. So we were listening to a lot of like, sort of singer-songwriters, of which it's a genre that it wasn't really me as a performer, as it turned out. But I still love Carole King and Joni Mitchell and Carly Simon. So I was listening to a lot of music that didn't really influence directly, although it did, actually. Well, it might not have sounded like it, but it didn't. It wasn't obviously connected to a Kim Wilde record, you know, a Joni Mitchell hissing of summer lawns, Kim Wilde Kids in America. it's quite hard to see the connection. But, you know, I was growing up listening to Stevie Wonder albums and very complex music, actually.
And it Elvis wasn't, Costello?
Elvis Costello. Yeah. I was a huge fan of Elvis
amazing
Costello.
Writer.
Yeah. and who I met, and I've got some lovely stories about Elvis Costello we could talk about later.
Yeah.
But so, yes, it was a really confusing place to be as a songwriter for me. Fit In was like one of the first songs, and it kind of showed how confused I was in a way. I didn't feel like I fitted in at all to the conventional being a pop star person. I didn't like hanging out at the place to be. I wasn't sort of into fashion and being an icon or anything like that. It didn't interest me. The only thing I was interested in was music. I'm going to shut up now. I haven't stopped talking for the last 10 minutes.
No, it's interesting. That's why you're here. But what was it like for you living on your own and being one of the most famous young ladies in the UK? And it must have been strange for you not being able to go out and do stuff. What was it like? What was your day-to-day life like?
Well, mostly when I moved home into London, I found a place in St John's Wood near Rack Records where we were signed to Mickey Most label. Found it one day. No one had ever lived in it. Did it up within a few months. I was living in it. Living alone, I found tough sometimes. I'd be doing lots of TVs, travelling a lot, having a load of fun, and then going back and finding myself on my own. You know, I was stalked a little bit too, so I had a few issues with people looking through windows. I remember one night particularly when some guy was like trying to climb up the pipe in the alley of where I lived. And
yeah, about that. I'd been drinking. That wasn't me. Can I just say for the record, it wasn't me.
That's our first revelation.
Well, anyway, I remember turning all the lights off and crawling on the floor and calling up someone and asking them to come back. So there were a few moments, but on the whole, it was just great to feel that I could afford to buy an apartment in London. I was so chuffed to be employed doing something I loved. There were lonely moments, but most of the time we were travelling, Rick, weren't we? We were going to Germany, we were going to Australia,
everywhere.
We were going to America, we were travelling, we were having so much fun. So for me, it was a place where I could learn who I was, not just as a person, my taste. I developed my own taste, you know, I could buy my own furniture, I could sit on my own chair. There was an incredible feeling of independence and I started to grow strong. And then the songwriting came, and then...
You probably needed to go through that in order to get to the point where you felt you could start getting into the writing side.
I've got to be honest, Rick, you know, being around you and Dad was really overwhelming because you were so great at it and it was so effortless for you. And so
industry point of view, was it a challenge as well? So when you move record company, that was also the start of your songwriting. So you went to MCA. Did you have to convince them that they were taking on Kim Wilde the songwriter as well as Kim Wilde the pop star, or was that never a battle?
Well, it wasn't a battle because we had our own studio. So they got what they were given on the whole. And I started writing with Rick pretty quickly. So it wasn't an issue at all. I never felt any of those issues that you hear about some women talk about being a woman in the industry. I hear about a lot of misogyny in the business. I've never experienced it. I've got to tell you, I've never felt it. It's not been an issue for me beyond what some people have on a day-to-day, but not any less or any more, I would say.
And as a songwriter, Kim, how long do you think it took you to feel confident in calling yourself a songwriter or to developing that skill? How long do you think it took you until you felt very comfortable in that role, given that what you said about the pressures of growing up with Ricky and Marty? And
well, I was always a poet, so I was or writing poetry or writing stuff that rhymed. That sounds less pretentious. So yeah, stuff that rhymed. I'd done that for years and years. I was already a lyricist, mm-hmm. without actually really knowing it. I always loved the written word. Loved English at school. Loved the English language. Loved the poetry of it. I was a painter. I went to art college. I was really connected into my thoughts and how to express them other than just I'm cold today. Just try, let's think of a lovely way of saying that or a different way to really communicate what that feels like today. Painting did it for me for a while when I was an artist, but then words did it better for me. I felt I can be more expressive with words. So they came first. And then when I started writing with Rick, who's primarily was working with melody, but not always, and very often with lyrics, and he'd pass me on some great lyrics to finish off. A point in case would be You Came, where Rick gave me the chorus and gave me the lyric for that and the rest of the song. But we'll talk about that another time. But
let's talk about it now.
Well, yeah. So, I mean,
okay, should we say the story of You Came? I'll kick
that.
It off and then I'll pass it over to you. Well, basically, the Close album was complete. Tracks were sounding great. To all intents and purposes, MCA were happy to release it as it was, and Dad and Mum and Kimmy were really happy with how it's all sounding, as was I, but I just felt we were one track short. So I decided to go into the studio. We had a weekend before MCA were going to come back to the studio to have a live playback, final playback of the album. So I had like two days, I think it was. Yeah, just the weekend to sort out another track. So I went into the studio on my own and I just turned all the gear on, got a couple of synths up and got a little groove going, and just started listening to a bit of Human League.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The reason for that was because Dare, I adored that album. It's one of my, still is one of my all-time favourite albums. Beautiful songs, but every single track is just an absolute corker. And I just felt that there was one more track in our album, and I wanted it to be like Our Dare. There's a track that Human League released quite a few years ago, and the song was called Life on Your Own, and it has very similar chords to You Came. And it goes a little bit like this. I guess you've always wanted life on your own. I guess you've always wanted. Yeah, so you can hear those chords, and they're very similar vibe-wise to the You Came chords. I just mucked around with them a little bit and changed it around, and then eventually came up with the chord sequence, which proved to be the same chords for the verse and for the chorus.
You came, you changed the way I feel. No one could love you more because you...
Yeah, so I was then the melody came very quickly and the lyric came very quickly. And that was about my little boy, who was very young at that time. I think he was only a few months old. And so, yeah, the whole chorus written about him. But I wanted the rest of the lyric to sound more global. So I just wanted it to mean that it could be anything to do with that changes your life, whether it be religion, a best friend, a new situation, or a group of people that you've or something that's affected your life in a life-changing way. So then I just phoned up Kimmy and said, look, come up with this, what do you think? And she liked it. Then she finished off the lyrics in an incredible way, which there's no way in a million years I could have done, because I'm good at coming up with choruses, but when it comes to the rest of it, it's I find that very difficult. But thankfully Kimmy, you know, she heard it, she understood the vibe and came up with the most incredible lyric.
Well, thank you, bro. But you know what? You can do it, because you were writing songs before you came and before Kids in America, and you were finishing all the lyrics off and you were doing a bloody great job. So I think it's, you know, that is typical of you to say that about yourself, because you're so humble, like Lee was saying. And you're more than capable of writing the most beautiful, honest lyrics, because you're that's the person you are.
Well, I don't know. I don't think of it that way. I just think that when I listen to your lyrics and Dad's lyrics, they just say something that I wouldn't have thought, it wouldn't have crossed my mind to say. So I love hearing that input, and it keeps the whole process of writing fresh for me, and it keeps it interesting rather than settling for lines or settling for a lyric that I might
but
bug me.
I tell you what, when we're writing together, though, you're very good at, you know, sifting out the chaff. So if there's something that's just a little bit waffly, or there's too many ands in, you know, we go out striking all the ands and the connecting words, like, come on, let's just get more direct here. Let's get to the essence of what we want to say here. Let's get rid of all the thes and the in and just make it, you know, because it's a really exciting thing that we do when we're writing together.
Mm. That's teamwork. That's what I love. That's what I love about working with you and other writers. You know, I find the whole process just a wonderful process and really interesting.
Do you prefer writing in collaboration with other people?
Do you know what? It's so different. Sometimes I'll write a song on my own and I'll be really pleased with the way it's all structured and the lyric and everything. And I'm really pleased with it generally with that. But I kind of do most of it on my own, like programming all the backing tracks and stuff. And then I'll send the backing track over to Kimmy. I'll send an MP3. And then Kim will come in a couple of days later and after she's written the bulk of the lyric. And then we get together and then we bounce ideas off and say, well, maybe this melody, maybe that lyric change, maybe this, maybe that. So that's kind of generally how we work. But saying that, it's so different with... I was working with this... wonderful artist called Nina, who Lee introduced me to a while ago. He sent me some stuff of hers, which I really liked. And then Lee and I went to a gig by a band called The Midnight, who we both really love. And we went to watch them live. And Nina was in the queue. And Lee says... It was meant to be. And weirdly, like 10 minutes before... We walked up to the gig. We went for a Five Guys. We're having a burger, having a chat. And he says, hey, you think about writing with anyone else? You should write with Nina. It's like, what? Really? He said, yeah. I didn't think about it. And there she was. So it was kind of like a, you know, one of those weird moments. And then we got chatting. And then she said, oh, we're three tracks short of the album.
And then Lee... we were in.
My pimp was smashed it. And he said, oh, well, you know, Rick's around. Right? And the next thing, Nina was here. So, and then Nina came up with Laura, who she does a lot of writing with and work with. And that was a totally different experience to how I would normally work. But It was beautiful, beautiful.
So are those
thing.
Songs written? Are they, or is that ongoing?
Yeah, we wrote the song. Shit, they only came up for one day, and we wrote a song, and that's going to be on her next album, and that's being recorded at the moment. And it was a wonderful experience, and I really enjoyed that. You know, other times, you know, Kimmy and I wrote a song just recently that was sent off to a band called the Lovers of Valdaro. And they're going to be cutting that song as well. So they're a Swedish band who just beautiful. They made some great records. So
they've actually just been robbed. They should be representing Sweden at Eurovision, but they missed out at the semi-final stage. But they really should have made it, to be fair. But they are definitely ones to watch.
Yeah, and great voices. And yeah, check them out on Spotify, guys, or buy it or download from iTunes. Beautiful stuff, and so they're doing one of our songs. So it's totally different. I've done these writing camps where, you know, there'll be 20 of you, and the main man will say, right, today, Rick, you're working with Curtis and Paul, and you don't know who you're going to write with. So there'll be three of you sitting in a room, and you have to write a song in that day, and then perform it in the evening in front of everyone. Which is, again, that's a totally different experience. So it's there's no hard set rules with writing, and there's different for me. I love every process because it's a learning curve, Jake. You know what I mean?
But I think generally we work very quickly. I mean, you all come up with a backing track really quickly.
Yeah.
And very often he might send it to me in the evening and I will listen to it and I will write it and have it literally ready for the next day when I... So literally, if the music talks to me, which it invariably does, very rare, isn't it, that you send something that doesn't get something, an idea going, and then it won't let me sleep, and then I literally just have to get on and do it. New Life is a point in... You know, I remember you sent that New Life from the Christmas album. You sent over one night, didn't you? It was quite late you sent it. And I was so blown away by the beauty of it, and the idea of calling it New Life came from the fact that Rick's daughter-in-law and son were just about to have their baby. In fact, the son who you came about was having a baby that we wrote New Life about, and
the first noise you hear on the final version of that song is
the heartbeat of the little baby,
yeah,
a little baby,
Ophelia,
and then
you hear the heartbeat on the track.
Yeah, that we sampled. When she had the
ultrasound thing, yeah,
that's the word I was looking for. And she recorded the heartbeat. And if you listen carefully, you can just hear Lissy saying, "It's amazing, isn't it?" And it's so sweet.
It was beautiful time, you know. Yeah. Rick's son was just about to have a baby. Our sister was just about to have a baby at the same time.
Yeah.
So New Life just poured out of me and was ready the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
You were talking about how you send things back and forth to one another. Obviously, that's something that's changed a lot in songwriting. So when you first started out, you didn't have the internet. You couldn't send each other tracks over email saying, have a listen to this. You had to be in the studio.
Yeah, yeah. You had to come to the studio and then they'd leave me alone in there. Do you remember? And I used to just get pads and pads. Never, you know, obviously the computers, you know, it was all handwritten stuff. And I have somewhere, you know, in my, because I've got a lot of memorabilia, and some places I find old lyric books where I was, you know, crossed out paragraphs, crossed out loads of lines, put in new ones. Yeah, so those were different days. But
is it easier to do it this way, the modern way?
Definitely. Yeah, it's great.
No less creative. Fantastic. No. I love working like this.
No, and it's yeah.
You know, just talking about that. Like, who's that guy you're working with? And you were telling me you just bang him over the track, and then he sends you back the.
Paul Bartolome. He's an amazing voice, amazing guy as well. Just he's only a young kid, but he's just an incredible writer, and he has his own setup at home. He has his own studio set up, and it's great because I just send him the backing tracks and he then records his vocal and then records the top line and the lyrics, and he records it so well as well. He's such a talent. And then he sends me the stems of his vocal over, and then I work on the track and put it back into my setup, and it all sounds great. It's a wonderful process.
So, Rick, say what stems are.
Oh, stems.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, stems. Stems is a track. So if you've got like a bass drum and a snare and a hi-hat and vocals and then chords and guitars, you know, each track that of so let's say the first track is a bass drum. When you print that, as such, that is a stem. So the stem of the bass drum, you've got a stem of the snare, stem of the vocals, blah, blah, blah. So that's what a stem is.
Is that how it happened with Frida on the duet as well? You didn't meet, yet you duetted?
No, I haven't met Frida Sandemo yet.
That's amazing, isn't it? You've duetted with someone that you've not met.
I can't tell you how much that EP of hers completely blew Ricky and I away.
Oh, all of us, yeah.
And it's still my go-to EP. If I can't think of anything to play on, you know, I'll always play Frida Sandemo. And, of course, Lee, you introduced her to Ricky and I. Ricky was playing her stuff in the dressing room and I really loved it. And now she's on our album. It was such an honour. Should have seen Rick when we heard that Frida was going to sing the song. For a while, it wasn't quite, you know, she took her little time and I don't know what she was doing, but she obviously works in a slow and thoughtful way, which is, you know, which you can tell when you listen to her amazing music and her songs. And she took her time to kind of think about the song and how she wanted to do it. Mm. Sadly, we haven't met her yet. We can't wait to meet her.
No, absolutely. And, it was a real honour for her to be on the album. And, she's an incredible voice, incredible talent. And actually, I'd love to have a chat with her about her songwriting. And where did she get...
You must do that. By the way, I've got to say, the EP is called Indigo. And then the album that she did after that is Flashbacks and Futures. Great album, worth checking out. Beautiful, pure voice of hers. Total honesty. It's like an angel, but there's a real toughness to it. You know, she's a proper puncher. When she,
it's quite
proper,
icy at times.
Yeah, quite
but
icy.
Very warm,
but
as
very,
well.
Very warm, but also really cold and hard. You know, just you wouldn't want to mess. You wouldn't mess with that girl.
Yeah, but I think the thing that I love about her is her honesty. It's just so honest.
Yeah.
Her vocal, the lyrics, the chords, it's just beautiful, really
but
open.
But also she has a sort of childlike quality.
Yeah, so, exactly very open.
And it's not in a babyish kind of way, but in the way that children are disarmingly honest. Yeah. And she has that quality.
Absolutely. That's really what hits me.
Is that a big part of what would make a great song for you, do you think? Honesty, truthfulness... What makes a great song, in your opinion?
Do you know what? It's right across the board, that one, Jakey, because there's like... you listen to something like Delilah, and I think that's Barry Mason, who's sitting there and thinking, give a story in his head, you know. I don't know where that came from, whether it's true or not, or honest. I love the lyric. I think it sounds fucking great, you know what I mean? And when I hear it, it makes me want to...
Love the story of it.
Yeah.
It takes you on a journey,
and at the end of it, you think, and you're singing, you're at the top of your voice, you know. I love that, you know. So, and I don't care where that came from, whether it's honest or not.
As a listener, you need to sort of connect with it, you think?
Yeah. If it makes you feel good, that's all. I just mentioned the honesty for Frida because that's what hits me when I hear her stuff. And that's one of the main things I love about her. But it's not necessarily that way for other artists.
Kim, when it was Rick and Marty's songs that you were singing and it's storytelling that you've got to interpret, were there subjects within their songs that sometimes were too hard, or you're like, what is this? I don't know how to perform it. I don't know what meaning to convey. Or
yeah, you know what, it's interesting because I never had a problem with singing my dad's lyrics, even when they were completely random, which they often were.
Or a bit risque sometimes, too.
Pardon?
A bit risque sometimes, too.
Yeah, they were. I mean,
shall we go there?
yeah. I mean, singing, you know, gaily singing about a prostitute who's given out her telephone number. Yeah.
I was actually going with The Second Time is where
I was
thinking.
Oh, yeah, The Second Time. The Second Time is a hilarious song. Ricky and I always have a bit of a giggle about it because, anyway, I can't even go there, even on a podcast like this. But obviously, you know, we know it's not sort of bowling.
But isn't that the difference between interpreting a song as a singer, in which you have to try and connect with it and do a performance of it, as opposed to having written it yourself? when there is an obvious connection straight away. So you're bringing different skill sets, I would imagine.
Well, as a performer, which I've developed into more as I've got as my career's gone on, I was always a performer, obviously, when I started off, you know. I mean, even though it was very understated, my performance on Top of the Pops for Kids in America, even though it was understated, but it was a performance, you know. I had a sense about my presence and the power that I could give, even though I didn't understand it. And it felt relevant and it felt right. And I think there's a lot about being a performer you don't really understand about yourself. It just seems to be an innate thing that I have, that I do. It's an odd thing talking about it in a way, because I take it for granted, and it just seems it's such a big part. It's so part of who I am.
But also, growing up and seeing Dad perform, I think that was a massive influence on both of us as performers. And
definitely in the latter years. I think initially, though, I wasn't doing much like live stuff, so it was a different kind of presence that I could project or seem to, you know, that's who, what people got. They got a video of me, they got a TV performance of me, but they didn't get much of a live, you know. So the live stuff is where people have really, I feel people get to really know who I really am now at this stage in my career, and not really start at the part.
And talking of live stuff, we've got the live album that's just about to drop. Sean, would you like to tell us about the live album? Seeing as you are such a major part of this, well, the whole of the Aliens project, you're a massive part of.
Yeah, well, the live album, interestingly, Kim's never done a live album, which is kind of strange for a career that's been going this long to not have done one. So I was always very keen that it was something we should do. And last year's tour was such a momentous tour. I think we all felt it was kind of the pinnacle of the live. We've been doing such a good job with the live shows for getting on for 20 years, I guess, since it all kicked off again. And I think we've just been getting better and better and better, and the band are so tight, and especially at the moment it's so exciting having two drummers, and it certainly felt last year when we started doing the Here Come the Aliens tour, it was the tightest and it was the most focused and it was the best version of Kim live.
Yeah.
And it was crazy to not. So even before we decided whether we were doing it or not, I sort of decided we'd record every show last year. So we recorded every single performance. So we've got, you know, terabytes of sound files. And obviously when we mentioned it to the record company, and obviously we talked to you guys about it, everyone was like, that's something we have to do. So kind of uniquely, I think, the live album is 19 songs, but recorded in 18 different cities. But when someone listens to it, it won't sound like 18 gigs stitched together. It will sound like one continuous show, even though actually each song is in a different city. I'm halfway through.
Was that deliberate, or was that just the best performances of each song?
I just thought it'd be a really interesting thing to do. I'd never heard a live album like that. It's normally a gig. You know, lots of people on social media have been getting in touch to say, what gig is it? They want to know if it was the gig they were at. And then, you know, we've just sort of let the cat out of the bag everyone, actually, it's 18 different cities. And the way we chose which ones to use was a case of which were the best ones. I won't give it all away yet, but it starts and ends in London, and then it sort of goes through Europe on the rest of the tracks. But yeah, there were certain cities where certain tracks resonate more. So like Cambodia in Paris, whenever we play that song in France, it just goes mad, doesn't it? They just love it, and it was just crazy.
Oh, it sold millions in literally millions in France. It was a massive hit over there.
And recently charted again. Yeah.
Yeah, it's back in the chart at the moment. Yeah.
34 in the singles chart in France this year. Cambodia.
That's crazy.
Just slid back in there.
And it's not been released as such.
No. It's strange.
It's crazy. But it struck a chord over there for some reason.
Massively. And that recording, I think everyone's going to love it. It's just so. That venue is. We always do an amazing gig there, but that night, you can't forget it. It was so hot and it was so busy. And
incredible.
La Cigale so in excited. Paris. One of our favourite gigs.
And you totally
ever.
Hear it. You know, the crowd was singing for so loud and so long. In fact, the breakdown. There's like a 5-minute gap where they just started singing and off the crowd go on their own. And you sort of had to shoehorn the next bit back in.
Amazing.
But I think the fans are going to love it. I think it totally captures us at our best, you know, and all the performances everyone does is the spot on.
Yeah.
And it's a...
And getting back to the Aliens album that was released, was it last January?
It was March last year.
Oh, was it March? Was it? Yeah. Oh, okay. So March last year we released the Aliens. And Aliens, well, what's all that about? What's all about?
Here Come the Aliens came, was one of the first songs we wrote, actually. The songs for Here Come the Aliens were written over quite a long period of time because some of the songs were written between you, with you and Scarlett, Scarlett Wald, your daughter, my niece, our backing singer, and artists, resident artists. The fact that I had an encounter that I've never understood crazily enough in my back garden.
So you saw a light?
And do you know what I actually saw, Rick? I was sitting outside, literally, I'd been at the A&E with our little boy who had suspected swine flu. I'd been at A&E all evening on a Friday night, so I hadn't been on the Chardonnay. I got back. My husband, Hal, was there, and one of my friends, Ed. We were sat in the back. I was telling them about this experience at the hospital, how worried I was about Harry. All of a sudden, I saw some helicopters flying from a direction that they never fly in our garden, from the southeast, and they flew right over our house.
How many?
Two.
So was it a clear night? I mean, was it
was
were
dusk.
There, were there
it was
clouds?
About,
or
it was dusk. There was some low cloud where I was looking at the light. There was... clear sky behind the house. I couldn't see the object, but I could see the light that it made, and it was static and quiet. We walked down to look at it. Then it suddenly moved. So it did an 11 o'clock to about 2 o'clock and stayed there. And it was astonishing.
Wow. I mean, that's a life-changing moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, and it certainly there. Changed our lives, because without that, we wouldn't have written Aliens.
No, Here Come the Aliens was after that. It's just my whole big subject now. I mean, if I go to bed now and I haven't got anything better to do in bed, then I will put on my... I will go on and look at all UFO files. I'll look and see if there have been sightings or anything. Yeah, it went on to inspire the whole album, really, you know. They gave me a great gift and a great insight into the... I believe into our existence and the universe.
Well, there you go. Mental, isn't it?
Nanu.
So Aliens was one subject matter that inspired you to write. I think this, the whole theme of this podcast about unsung heroes, people don't often think of some of the subjects that you've both written about, because they think of the love songs, they think of, you know, You Came and Four Letter Word that you wrote with Dad. But there's a theme around the environment which runs very strongly through your songs as well. I'm thinking of songs like Stone, Who's to Blame, and Schoolgirl, which I think was written about Chernobyl or around the time of Chernobyl. What inspires you to write about the environment that way? It's obviously something you care about, and that passion really comes through in the songs.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when you've become a parent, you know, your relationship with your planet and your environment totally changes. It transforms. I think becoming a gardener had a big part, has played a big part in my life, and that connectedness to the garden and to the environment. Yeah, these are scary times, and Chernobyl was a terrible moment, really scary, terrifying, real wake up call. I don't know what it's going to take humankind to really wake up. Probably something that's when it's too late.
Is that a huge challenge for you, Rick, when Kim comes with really deep, often, you know, political lyrics, and you've got to write a pop song? That must be quite a challenge.
No, that's never an issue. I love honesty in lyrics, and I think there's never any bullshit with Kim's lyrics. She wouldn't sing it otherwise, and she has to be able to sing and believe and feel what she's singing.
Unsung Heroes.
You have been listening to Unsung Heroes with me, Ricky Wilde, Jake Wood and Lee Bennett. Produced and created by myself and Jake Wood for Wildwood Productions. With music and editing, again by myself, Ricky Wilde. Artwork by Scarlett Wilde and hosted by Acast. Just to remind you that there is a link in the notes directing you to a Spotify playlist featuring all the songs we have discussed in this episode. Many thanks for listening.
Unsung Heroes.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.